We're going to talk about the stuff of life tonight. We're going to go through chapter 29 and maybe get the first part of chapter 30. I'm not sure exactly where we'll get to, but here's where we've been. We have watched Jacob. He gained the birthright as Esau just gave it to him over a mess of chili, and then he and his mother tricked Esau, and actually Isaac, and got him to give the blessing to Jacob, and we watched how that did. And Isaac got the blessing. He didn't really do wrong, I would think, in terms of the birthright. He's just messing around with his brother and say, give me your birthright, and the guy's starving, and he takes it that way. I don't look at that as really a one of those places where you premeditated murder kind of thing. I think he just did it. But in terms of the blessing that he got from Isaac, that was Rebecca's trickery, but he went along with her in terms of that. We also know that you got to think both horizontally and vertically. All of our lives, you need to think horizontally and vertically. That is, you can think about your life strictly from a human standpoint, and it's just how you do and everything that we do in our lives, and people are no good because that's why Jesus died. And, you know, you can go along that way in terms of horizontal. But you really need to think a little bit vertical in terms of how your life and the lives of others plays into your story, also how God plays into their story, and all the people that are involved around you. So you think both horizontally and vertically. We know this about Jacob. He thought a little bit vertical at times, but he did not know God at that point in time. He knew about God through Isaac, probably also his grandfather, Abraham, who was alive for about his first 15 years of life. But anyway, he's just functioning out there like any human being in terms of that thing. But we also know that Esau was strictly out of the flesh. He thought strictly on a horizontal level. Now, we're following a path here with Jacob. And so are you. You are following a path in terms of your life, and you need to recognize that truth. And that's one of the reasons why when I do Bible study and things like this, we need to discover God's will for our own lives. And as we look at some of these stories in the Old Testament especially, we can get some insight. If you're just doing Bible study for the sake of Bible study in terms of the what's going on there historically, it's pretty dry stuff and good to sleep by. When you start thinking about it in terms of, okay, this can be about my life too, and God is working in my life and the people that I know as well. And you have to think about horizontally and vertically. Some things are determined by us, and some things that we determine are the stuff of life that we all live, and people around us. And we can be the victims, or we can be those who cause trouble with other people's lives. And we watched Jacob, and really he was about 40 years old, according to the Bible, when he encountered God for the first time. I call it his conversion experience when he was at Bethel and he went down to sleep and he had an encounter that came out of his dream. And it was so real a dream about the angels going up and down into heaven. It's when God got personal with him. And the other thing I know about this, which is also important, is you don't always have to be seeking after God. God may come looking for you. And things can happen to you where God intervenes or enters into your life in some way, and you're really not even looking for him at any point. And that's where we find Jacob. He was just running for his life from Esau, and he had an encounter with God through that dream in that place, and God got personal with him. And you can think about your own life. If you've had that experience where God gets personal with you, and you know it's personal with you. I mean, it's something that speaks to your heart and your mind and your life. That's what happened to him at Bethel when he had that dream. And at that point, I call that his conversion experience, because up to that point, God, he knew about him, but at that point in time, he knew him. And Jacob becomes a man of God, sort of. And the reason we say sort of is because in verse 20 of chapter 28, we talked about this last week, verse 20 of 28. Then Jacob made a vow. He's talking to God here, and he says, if God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go and will give me bread to eat and clothing to wear so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. Now notice this. This is so, oh, so human of us. I know enough people to know this thing. You know, he says, if God will do this. And it's all conditional on his side. Well, if God treats me right, I'll follow him wherever he leads, and I'll do this and that. If he causes me to prosper, I'll be his man and all this stuff. And that's exactly the way he acts here. He says, well, if God will do this stuff, then I'll be his man. But if things don't turn out right, then I guess I won't be his man. And that's what we do. Now, this is an encounter with God here. In Jacob's life, as we walk through it, he encounters God five times. Think about your life, because some of this stuff has to resonate with us, or it's just like eating straw. How many times have you had an encounter with God in your life? We just finished this last week. That's his first encounter with God. In chapter 28 of Genesis. Think about your life. I thought about my life in terms of this stuff, and I got to thinking about, okay, how many times have I encountered God? I mean, where he feels very real. I'm not talking about going to church or anything. I'm talking about when God actually just sort of was right there in front of you and talked to you. I think I've had six times, maybe. And this is since I was 21, so it's over a 50-year period. I had one in my conversion experience, which took place in my bedroom, literally, when I was 21. And then when I was about 21 and a half, when I was thinking about, well, am I supposed to really go into the ministry? What did you know and all this stuff? And I had another encounter with God, and that one just smoked me, man. And I didn't get over that for a long time in terms of, I didn't talk to anybody about it because they would think I was crazy, and I may be, but that's beside the point. But it wasn't for another 10 years that I really hadn't had an encounter with God where, you know, he's right there in front of you, and it's like it's real stuff. And that happened on my Crucio weekend in Nashville, Tennessee in 1979. But it was 7 years later after that before I had another one. And in the midst of all this stuff, I'm living life. I'm doing at least what I think I'm supposed to be doing and going on. And then I had another encounter 4 years after that. And then I had another one 8 years after that. And I could sit down and we could by our campfires and I could tell you all about those encounters and thing. But most of life is mundane. Most of the time you're going through life day in and day out, and things can get pretty boring at times. But then some tragedy or something happens and you get all, and it really is not good, and you say, well, boring would be good now. Have anybody been there? Hey, I'll take boring because it's okay. You see, we have troubles in life as well. There's lots of small moments, and Jacob is living his life. And he's doing it in small moments, just like you. And now he's had an encounter with God right here. And this is what happens. And so he goes. He's a man, God's man now, and he's on his journey of life. And you can choose your friends, but you can't choose your family. That's a principle. You can choose your friends. Well, sort of you can choose your friends. I've also found out that. But family, hey, there are no choices here. You get them. Whether you want them or not, you get them. Anyway, we're going to talk about the stuff of life tonight as Jacob moves on after he's had his mountaintop experience with God in Bethel. And I want to read to you chapter 29, and I like the first five or six words. Then Jacob went on his journey. You know, you might say that I can think back and say, and Jack went on his journey in life. And that's where he's going. He's God's man on the journey of life. And you can choose your friends, but you can't choose your family. So he's going on his journey. And he came to the land of the people of the east. And that's where they came from in the first place. Verse 2 and 3. As he looked, he saw a well in the field, and lo, three flocks of sheep lying beside it. For out of that well the flocks were watered. The stone on the well's mouth was large, and when all the flocks were gathered there, the shepherds would roll the stone from the mouth of the well and water the sheep and put the stone back in its place upon the mouth of the well. And that's a description of that particular well in terms of what's going on as he comes into this place on his journey in life. My journey in life, think about your journey in life, and you just you're moving along and you come upon things. Verses 4 to 8. Jacob said to them, my brothers, where do you come from? These are the guys coming in with their flocks. And they said, we are from Haran. Now, if you remember Haran, Haran is where Abraham's father stopped. And then he moved on. He said to them, do you know Laban, the son of Nahor? And they said, we know him. And he said to them, is it well with him? And they said, it is well. And see, Rachel, his daughter, is coming with the sheep. And so she's coming with a flock of sheep too. And he said, behold, it is still high day. It is not time for the animals to be gathered together. Water the sheep and go and pasture them. But they said, we cannot until all the flocks are gathered together and the stone is rolled from the mouth of the well, and then we water the sheep. Now, these are not the brothers of Laban or anything like these. These are just shepherds out there. They may be shepherds of Laban. We don't know that for sure one way or the other. It could be other owners of sheep around there. Who knows? But we do know this, that Rachel is his daughter, Laban's daughter. And we know that from this scripture. Verses 9 to 12. While he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she kept them. Now when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, Jacob went up and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and wept aloud. Is this a scripture about bad breath, or what is this? I don't know. Anyway, I've thought about that. That's one of those where I just kind of go, oh, what's that all about? And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's kinsman and that he was Rebekah's son, and she ran and told her father. Now, a couple of things about these verses. These guys are not the brothers of Laban. They're not probably not his sheep either, we don't know, but Rachel is his daughter. I'm not sure. Do you believe in love at first sight? I do. I've seen enough instances where I'd say that that's an actual fact. There are some people who connect with others, and it is love at first sight. And I think in this case, that's where Jacob is. I just get that feeling that down the road, I mean, he's taken with her right away. Can't prove this, but it just seems to me that that's probably the case here. Verses 13 and 14. When Laban heard the tidings of Jacob, his sister's son, he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. Jacob told Laban all these things, and Laban said to him, "Surely you are bone of my bone and my flesh," and he stayed with him a month. Okay, introductions are going to take place. This is a month-long period of time in those two verses, so think about this. Everything's kind of okay so far, and he probably told Laban why he was there, but not the whole truth. What do you think? He probably didn't say, "My brother's trying to kill me, and so mom and dad said, get out of here and go to your mother's brother." I don't think he said that. Only a fool answers questions that aren't asked. Anyway, I don't think he did that. But I think he says, "Well, my parents sent me over here looking for a bride," probably. I would think that. So he's there because of marriage, you know. And actually, that is the truth, because they said that back in chapter 28 to him, didn't they? So he's not really lying to them, but I doubt if he talks much about Esau at this point in time. I'm just speculating here, but I just got that feeling that he's telling them the truth, but not the whole truth, so help me God, kind of thing. So I think that's probably what's going on. Verses 15 to 20, then Laban said to Jacob, "Because you are my kinsman, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what shall your wages be?" Now, we know Laban, don't we? Laban is he's a conniver. He doesn't deal in straight-up stuff. He is really a conniver. Actually, I think that he makes Jacob look like a piker when it comes to doing this kind of stuff. Anyway, he says, "So tell me, what shall your wages be?" Now, Laban knows why he's there. Now, Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel, who he met at the well. That's not in there. Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel was beautiful and lovely. And they're telling you something about the two girls. Probably Leah was nearsighted or something like that was going on with her eyes in terms of that. And Rachel was beautiful and lovely, and, you know, she'd catch a young man's eye. So Jacob loved Rachel, and he said, "I will serve you 7 years for your younger daughter, Rachel." Laban said, "It is better that I give her to you than I should give her to any other man." stay with me. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of the love he had for her. Now, we know these things from this scripture. Now, you know, you're just talking about a couple of minutes of reading time here in terms of this stuff, but you can infer some things about, if you just think about life around you and how you've lived your life and your journey of life. Jacob has become a man of God here, okay? He has had that encounter with God, but he has probably been smitten by Rachel the first time he met her. I don't know for sure, but I would say there's a pretty good chance of that. So Jacob loves Rachel, and Leah has vision problems, and he served for 7 years, and it says that it seemed like just a few days. Well, here, you know, we're talking about discovering God's will, and this is on a day-to-day basis, and God isn't always up there saying, "Hey, Jack, do this, do this, do this, do this. Stop at that stoplight. No, don't do that." God doesn't sit around and just tell us what to do all the time. So we're discovering God's will day-to-day, kind of like Jacob is on this journey of life. We know, because Scripture says so, Jacob has favor in the sight of God, because we remember what he said to Jacob in that dream. That's what we know, that, hey, I'm going to be with you. I'm going to take care of business around you, and I'm going to get you home again. And that's part of his promise to Jacob. We know that, and Jacob has heard that from God. So he has favor with God. Now, let me ask you a question. I try to think about it. Does Jacob think about God all the time? Oh, come on. No. I mean, he's just like you and me at that point. I mean, do you get up in the morning, maybe you have your devotion, and then you go through your day. Are you thinking about God all the time in the midst of all the stuff that's going on? Now, think about Jacob here. He's not thinking about God all. You know what he's thinking about? He's thinking about Rachel. I mean, he is taken with that woman, and he has got a goal in his life, and he's going to work for 7 years so that he can reach his goal, which is to marry Rachel and get her for himself. I would say that if you were to rank what he thought about, Rachel would be on top. God would be down there someplace in 4 or 5, maybe not even that much. Now, if you think about your life, have you ever been working towards something in your life? You were working for, and things are good because you have a goal in your life and you're moving towards it, and everything seems to be pretty good in terms of moving towards that goal. That's where Jacob is. He has a goal in his life. Now, you also have to think about this. While he's doing that, he's probably not thinking about God a lot, but there's a horizontal thing going on. He's got relationships with Rachel, and I'm sure with Leah too, and Laban and whoever it is, and all the people that he works with, and he's got the horizontal things of life going on. But, you know, God has already ordained and is involved in his life that the promise for redemption for humanity is going to come down through Jacob. And I talked about your life. That may be that redemption comes down through your life for somebody in your family, maybe people around you, where you actually are the redemption plan for other people's lives. God is in this. But I don't think he's thinking a whole lot about God. You know, and I think about people that I have, you know, I take tours and people who weren't working for something, goals in their life. Young couples, they get married. They have ambitions or things that they're going for in terms of life. And they move towards those things. But you don't, once again, you don't choose your family or your in-laws for that matter. I mean, you don't choose them, or maybe you do. When you get them. But, you know, young couples moving towards a goal in their life, and they're just going along. Maybe it's a single person, and that single person says, I've got an ambition for my life, and they're going on in terms of that profession and stuff, and they're moving towards it. And maybe God's in your life too, you know, and that kind of thing. But do you think about it a lot? Especially when you're young. Do you think about that stuff? Now think about your life. Where were you? Young married, single person, going off to college maybe? Maybe it's a middle-aged couple or something like that, and you've been married for a while, and where are you going, and what's important now? What are the goals that you're reaching for in terms of life and stuff like that? That's Jacob's doing that. He has a goal for his life, and he wants to reach that goal. And things are actually going along pretty good here during that 7 years. From what I can gather, I mean, Laban's getting the work out of Jacob. And Jacob has, you know, he's got a finish line down there where he gets the girl of his dreams. And so we're going on in terms of that. Now, let me ask you another question. Think about your life. Have you ever been going towards a goal in your life, but it just didn't turn out like you thought it would? Yeah, I see some heads nodding. Well, that's where we're heading here. we're heading towards some goals that things aren't going to turn out quite like Jacob thought they were going to. But remember, God is with him. God may be with you too. Sometimes things don't turn out the way we want them to. So, verse 20, so Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of the love that he had for her. Now, that one sentence right there says a great deal about Jacob. Verses 21 to 27, then Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife that I may go into her, for my time is completed. 7 years have passed. So Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast. But in the evening he took his daughter Leah and brought her to Jacob, and he went into her. Laban gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah to be her maid. Now that's in there too. And in the morning, behold, it was Leah, and Jacob said to Laban, what is this you have done to me? Did I not serve with you for Rachel? Why then have you deceived me? And Laban said, it is not so done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. Complete the week of this one, and we will give you the other also in return for serving me another 7 years. Now, things don't turn out just like he thought they were going to in terms of that, because Jacob is in it now. The night before, everything was good, was it not? And he awakens in the morning, and things have changed. And I look at this stuff, and I cause, because of circumstance and trickery. I want you to notice something about Jacob here. He is now a man of God because he had a conversion experience at Bethel. And before that, he committed the trickery against Esau and all that. But he has been straight up with Laban for 7 years. Is it because he is God's man now? Well, I don't know for sure, but maybe so. Maybe that's what turned him. So here comes this thing, and he gets thrown a real curve in his life. Anybody ever been thrown a real curve? This is the stuff of life here. I want you to think about this. Think about it from the horizontal standpoint. And that's just people doing what they do. And that was trickery, and it wasn't just circumstance here. This was really deceitful. Kind of like he did earlier. I think about this, and I really do think about this. Maybe God was allowing him to get a taste of his own medicine. Or maybe he was just experiencing someone who'd sinned against him. It could be either. Or both. But this is the stuff of life. And when I read this stuff, I think about, okay, I'm going to think about my life a little bit in terms of how things work out and the horizontal stuff in life that happens to us all. And then, but also, what's God doing in the midst of all this in terms of my life? And this is part of what I think is discovering God's will in terms of living our lives, not only just living our lives, but also kind of finding some kind of a way in which, how is God working in the midst of all this? And we all have stuff, that stuff of life. Verses 28 to 30. Well, back up, verse 27. Complete the week of this one, and we will give the other also in return for serving me another 7 years. Jacob did so and completed her week, and then Laban gave him his daughter Rachel to wife. Laban gave his maid Bilhah to his daughter Rachel to be her maid. So Jacob went into Rachel also, and he loved Rachel more than Leah and served Laban for another 7 years. Now, remember that God is working redemption through Jacob for the entire race. All of us here, okay? But this is real living. and it's the stuff of life. So he works a week to get Rachel, but he ends up working another 7 years there in terms of this as well. But he gets Rachel after a week. So 2 weeks before, he is single, footloose, and fancy free, and everything's going his way, and his goal in life is about to happen to him. And then 2 weeks later, he has two wives. He loved Rachel more than Leah, understandably so. I mean, if he fell for the girl at the well, you know, and all this, that's in there. God, remember, God's in it. The second thing is that Leah participated in the deception, so she is not without sin here. Now, and there's another thing about this story that I said. I'm sure Laban got him drunk. I'm just positive that, because I don't think you could slip a girl in that on me unless I was pretty well three sheets to the wind. But isn't that reality, guys? Huh? Huh? I think I know. I mean, unless you put a blindfold on me, but even then, I think I would know. But I want you to think about this. No matter how upright you are, some things happen to us. Some things happen to us because of the trickery of other people, the deception of other people. I also wonder about, where was Rachel on that night? Did they tie her up? I mean, did Laban tie his daughter up? I mean, I don't know where she was in all this. I got a sneaking suspicion that her mind was a little bit better than Leah's. So they may have had her off someplace for some reason, but I think Jacob would know that she was around, wouldn't you? I mean, I think about this stuff because you read these stories, it's kind of like reading a tombstone, but you got to think about what's going on. These are real people like you and me. And listen, I've been taking enough tours in people's lives to know how deception works and how people can treat each other and everything. So the second thing is, Leah is a participant in this, and she commits sin against Jacob. The third thing that might be going on here, and this is all speculation, but I just can't imagine that these aren't real people. Jacob now knows how Esau must have felt when he stole his blessing, because he participated in deception against his father and his brother. And if he stops to think about this at all, he might come to the understanding, you know, I did this too. And the fourth thing that I see here is Laban and Leah are kind of like Rebecca and Jacob. They almost echo each other. It's almost the same kind of deception, because the blessing is stolen from Jacob. The fifth thing about this is that 1 week later, Jacob marries Rachel. 1 week later. And it says he loved Rachel more than Leah. And in that saying right there, you need to think about this a little bit. He's about to serve 7 more years for free, room and board, basically. Another thing that you need to think about this is that 2 weeks earlier, he's single. He's a senior in college, and suddenly he wakes up, and he not only has two wives who are sisters. He has two other women in his household. He has four women in his household at this point in time. And I would have to say at this point in time, Jacob is in it now. Now, I know that I'm talking to men and women, but you guys, from a male standpoint, think about this. You girls, from a woman's standpoint, think about this a little bit. He is in it now. Think vertical too, but God is in this. But it's strictly humanity taking place here. We also know this. God is with them. He told him at Bethel. At that time, I don't know if Jacob is even thinking about God in that moment at Bethel or not, but I there might be at least in the back of his mind, I thought you were with me. You know, I mean, what am I doing? I got four women here. I don't know what to do, and I got to work for seven more years for this guy. Life was so simple 2 weeks ago. So you think you've had it bad. Think about Jacob. And then we know this. He loved Rachel more than Leah and served Laban for another 7 years. We know this. Oh, these are people like you and me. Jealousy would be coming forth. In Leah, she has self-worth problems. So jealousy comes up. Envy comes up, and if you're reading Galatians 5:22, you talk about the fruits of the Spirit, but right before that are the fruits of the flesh, and guess what? Jealousy and envy are the fruits of the flesh, and you got four women there, and you got all kinds of eddies and currents of emotions and mood swings, etc., etc. You've got four women and one man. Jacob, you're in it now. Now, if that's not bad enough, things get worse. I mean, you got to think about this. I mean, we read this story and we read it to the kids and we do it in Sunday school and everything, but this is rated R at least. Now, think about your life. Just think about all the stuff that you have gone through, or you might even be going through right now. All the stuff that you have had to deal with in terms of your life. And I call this the stuff of life, but you might also be able to translate and say, you know, when they were moving manure across the ocean, they said, ship high in transit. And then they just shorted to the first letter of each word. This is the stuff of life here. Now, I want you also to think about this, because this is the stuff of our lives, too, that we're kind of talking about here. You got to think about, how is God working in your life, but also, how is God working in people's lives around you, maybe parts of your family and things like this. So think about the different viewpoints here and the people that you have. Now, we are looking at it from the standpoint of Jacob, because he is the one that the redemption of humanity is moving through, and we know that story. That goes with the story. That's like the main theme that goes down this thing. But you have two sisters. You have Leah and Rachel. What is their viewpoint on life at this point? How do they think about this whole situation? Then you have Zilpah and Bilhah, the two handmaidens of these girls. And everybody, all four of those people, Jacob, I mean, I can imagine myself in Jacob's place, sort of. I'm not sure you could really imagine that. But think about it. They all see life differently, every last one of them. And if you want to talk about Jacob, you could say, well, you have a Christian man here. He's a man of God. Now, I mean, he had his conversion experience at Bethel and all that goes on. So you could say you have a Christian man here who God has spoken to and made some promises to, but also tricked his brother before he had that conversion experience. And so he's a sinner as well. And he has to deal with all of this. So we can call him a man of God, even though he's been a jerk. And even though he's done evil, he's had a conversion experience. He's had an encounter with God. And now he was doing everything upright, and he ends up with two sisters and their handmaidens, and he's married to them. And they all have a part of the play in this too, because you got to think about the redemption of humanity. Those four women right there are going to have the children of Jacob down the road. So think about the vertical part of this. Even though this is strictly flesh, man, it is just full of life. And think about your own family and how that works and all that goes with that and everything. It says, you know, you have to deal with the humanity of all these people and all the things that they think and the way they see the life as well. And here is Jacob, who finally had done something correct in terms of his life. I think that sometimes I think about Jacob and I say, oh, if it weren't for bad luck, I'd have no luck at all. You know, and I said, where are you, God? I thought you talked to me. So here he has four women. But things get worse or better depending on whose viewpoint you're looking at. Things get worse. Or they get better, depending on your perspective. And what you have here, I heard Jimmy Buffett did a song one time, talked about this guy who's going to kill himself and everything because all the trouble was going on in his life. And it was like God talked to him. He says, hey, your life's not coming to an end. It's simply complicated. And what we have here is complications. Look at verse 31. And when the Lord saw, now notice that the Lord is involved here a little bit. When the Lord saw that Leah was hated, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. Here comes the thing. I think about this too. I said, okay, did Jacob really hate her or did he hate the circumstance? I would say that he had he probably at least disliked her seriously because of the deception. But I don't know if he hated her, really hated her, more than he hated the circumstance and how this happens. But we know this, that Leah felt it down in her bones. And does she deserve it? I would say, yeah, she deceived him completely. And so, but she's got it down in her bones and said, you know, I'm hated here. And it says he opened her womb. I won't talk about the bedroom scenes. Who knows about those? And Leah conceived, verse 32. And Leah conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Reuben, for she said, because the Lord has looked upon my affliction, surely now my husband will love me. And in that one verse, you hear her heart's desire. So remember, there are different viewpoints on life that are going on in the context of this. There are four women, and they all see the world differently than Jacob. And they all see the world differently from each of them. And so suddenly she said, because the Lord has looked upon my affliction, not Jacob's affliction, not Rachel's affliction, not the slave girls, but my affliction, surely now my husband will love me. By the way, Reuben's name means see, a son. And it has the viewpoint of hope in that name. So we have that going on. So we have one child, a boy. She conceived again and bore a son and said, because the Lord has heard that I am hated, he has given me this son also. So she has a second child, and she called his name Simeon, which means hearing, or God has heard me. And so out of her affliction and out of her lack of self-esteem, which is probably warranted at this point in time because Jacob loves Rachel. And the heart knows what it wants. And since the very beginning, he has loved Rachel. And she deceptively became part of that family. But she's still praying from her viewpoint, God has heard me and given me another son. And she's probably thinking, well, hey, I got a second child. Leah has no children. He's going to love me. He's going to love me because I'm giving him children. This is horizontal thinking, folks. That's the horizontal side of this stuff. Remember that God is using this humanity, and God uses our humanity as well in all the different life situations that are represented just in this room. He is using our life situations. And for some of us, we may be involved in the redemption of members of our family, or maybe friends or co-workers, or maybe somebody else has been the redemption of you. So she conceived and bore a second son. So you got two kids in the household. Both of them are still in diapers. Verse 34. Again she conceived and bore a son and said, now this time my husband will be joined to me. In other words, he will really love me and we will be one together, to become one flesh, kind of thinking. Because I have borne him three sons. Therefore, his name was called Levi, which means joined. The husband will join with her. I know that he will accept me as his wife. Joined together. This is the woman who has been spurned for good reason, but in the whole midst of the thing, she is suffering from terrible self-esteem and worth issues at the same time. And now you have three children in this. And I'm telling you what, these all happened within that seven-year period. Got it? So we got three kids that are probably in diapers at the same time right there. Verse 35, and she conceived again and bore a son and said, this time I will praise the Lord. Therefore she called his name Judah, then she ceased bearing. That means praise, actually, Judah does. So Leah is feeling better about herself because the names will indicate what's happening to her. And the last one is called praise. Now remember this, you've got lots of people involved here. You got a couple of handmaidens, basically, they're taking care of the work of the house. I know that, or they're around here, but you got Rachel in this too. And Rachel is not having any children. And Jacob loves Rachel, and he doesn't love Leah. Now, I don't know if his attitude towards Leah is changing or not, but there seems to be that indication just in the name changes or the different names of these children. But think about it. These are people like you and me, and they have all the stuff that is going on in life. And all that's going on. And I think about the lives of people that I have been pastor of over the last 40 years. And, you know, I see all kinds of issues like this in terms of two or three marriages, in terms of people and mixed families, in terms of kids and all that goes with that. And I see all this stuff happening. And this story right here just is the stuff of life. And you might as well put it in the 20th century as well as the first century or whenever it was. People, this is people. And is God involved in my life? God, where are you? Jacob has had, he has four boys by Leah, and Rachel has not conceived. And I can you, oh, real people. Rachel comes in and says, what are you, it's your fault, Jacob. And he said, hey, man, I'm doing the best I can here. Not only that, but you got four kids around that table, and they're probably all of them in diapers, or one of them may be out of diapers at this point in time. And they're sitting around the kitchen table at mealtime, and I can just imagine the webs of intrigue that are going through that place. And Rachel's sitting over there seething because she has no children. And Leah's sitting over there, and I have four kids, and they're all right here. And what is Jacob doing at this point in time? And he says, you know, and Rachel gets on his case and everything. About that time, you get up from the dinner table and say, I'm going to work. That's what I'd be doing. I got to go out and check out the sheep out there and what's going on out there. So you got all this stuff going on here, and you don't, we don't read the Bible like this. But this is what's going on, and God's involved. Remember that. The redemption of humanity comes through this family. And the redemption of some of humanity may come through your family. And you may be like Jacob. You may be that one that it's going through, but there are all kinds of people around you as well. Chapter 30, verse 1, when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, she envied her sister, and she said to Jacob, give me children or I shall die. Verse 2, and Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel, and he said, am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the loom? And basically, there was a war that took place in that household right then. Because Rachel was filled with envy and jealousy of Leah. Because fruitfulness had to do with children. And Jacob, he flew off to handle the ladder and said, hey, am I God? This ain't my problem. You see this woman over here? She's having kids, and guess who she's having them with? So it isn't me. It's you. Now, how does Rachel feel in the midst of all that? Not good. I would say that that's going on there. He gets mad. What do you want me to do, woman? I'm doing my part in this. I'm not God. And the things are worse. Now, it's not the end of life. It's just complicated. Simply complicated. Verse 3, then she said, here's my maid Bilhah. Okay, things can get worse. she said, here's my maid Bilhah. Go into her that she may bear upon my knees, and even I may have children through her. It's not the end of the world. It's just simply complicated. Enter the handmaiden, Bilhah. Obviously, and Jacob probably not heard the story about Hagar too much. Maybe a little, but that was way back when he was between the ages of 0 and 15 when he was talking to Abraham. And I doubt if Abraham brought that up because that was kind of a black spot in his life. And so he probably didn't bring that up. So he can't learn from somebody else's mistake. And he's listening to the woman tell him that says, hey, here, shack up with my girl that I use as a slave here. And what does he do? Well, he gives into it, obviously. And as he would have probably said, it was not my fault here. And verse 5. And Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. Things are getting more complicated. You got five now. Five children between, well, they're not seven yet. I know that much. And so he got five. And just remember, there was a time when Jacob was really looking for the goal of life of just marrying the girl of his dreams. And 2 weeks later, all this starts. And God's in it. Lord, where are you? So, and Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. Then Rachel said, God has judged me and has also heard my voice and given me a son. Therefore, she called him Dan. Now, Dan means he judges or he judged. God has judged me and he has also heard me and he has given me consolation. That's basically what this is being said right here in terms of this. Now, you understand, this is 9 months have passed in this period. This is not just a tombstone with engravings. God has judged me and has also heard my voice and given me a son. Verse 7 and 8. Rachel's maid Bilhah conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. Then Rachel said, with mighty wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister. And right there you get the relationship of the two sisters. They're at war with one another. So she called his name Naphtali. Now, Naphtali means wrestling. It's very similar to Jacob's name, which was a wrestling term, too, of overthrowing. So Naphtali is that. So she has two children by her handmaiden now, but she still hasn't had any. And, oh, God, I would hate to have to do counseling for this family. I mean, just think about it. I don't know what to tell them. I would be hard-pressed at this point in time because, and you have, now you got six kids sitting around the table at dinner time. You got Leah and Rachel, and they are at each other's throats, even if there is a cold war going on. Yeah. And Jacob knows all this, and now he's got one of the handmaidens has two kids. Now, enter another viewpoint here. You need to think about that viewpoint. I know about mothers. They're different than us fathers. Mothers, you don't want to mess with their cubs. I mean, if you want real wrath, that's where you go. You just pick on one of their kids. And so you got six kids here, and even though they aren't Rachel's, they're her handmaiden. So her handmaiden, guess what? She loves her children. And she might say, well, hey, I'm better than the gal I work for. Hey, and you know how that stuff goes. And Rachel's seething with envy and jealousy towards Leah. So all I can see is the supper table, bickering, resentment, bitterness. And I think this is true of all of them. Jacob has had his encounter with God. He has had his conversion experience. God is in there, but God hasn't talked to him since in terms of, well, you know, he may say his prayers. I bet you 2 minutes he's saying his prayer. But I bet you some of those prayers are, God, where are you in all this? I mean, what am I going to do with all these women and these kids and everything else? And I'm just going nuts out here. But I mean, at the kitchen table, here it's going, you know, and you can just feel it. And you got six boys under the age of seven. And all that's going on at that table, and he says, I got to go take care of the sheep. And he leaves I mean, I think I would be going to work. I don't know what else to do. You got all these eddies and currents going on. And this is, that's just at the kitchen table. Verses 9 to 11. When Leah saw that she had ceased bearing children, she's got four now, she took her maid Zilpah and gave her to Jacob. Things can get worse. You may think they're bad enough, but they can get worse. And gave her to Jacob as a wife. And about that time, I'm thinking, Jacob, I am just a slave to these women. Where are you, God? Then Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a son. And Leah said, good fortune. And Jacob said, oh, my God. That's not in there, by the way. And so she called him his name Gad, which means fortune or a place, like a lot, and or seer. He's the seventh son, by the way, Gad is. And Jacob said, just shoot me. No, that's not in here either, but it might as well be. Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a second son. And Leah called, said, happy am I, for the women will call me happy. So she called his name Asher, which means happy. I always think about the seven dwarfs, the name Happy. And if it weren't for people, my ministry would be great. You know, that's kind of thinking. If it weren't for my family, I was doing fine until all this happened. Now, I know this about us. Right here, we have mixed families in the context of just the people that are here. But I've been dealing with people for years and years and years, and there are mixed families all over the place. But usually it's one woman and one man at a time. But I also know that there can be several that are involved. And if there are children involved, there are all kinds of eddies and currents that go with that, and all kinds of webs of intrigue and envy and jealousy and all the things that are humanity involved in terms of life. So I read this story, and I know that this is very much like what we live in right now in our society. I do not have to watch soap operas because I can live with people around me, and I know that all this stuff goes on, and I actually have to intervene in some of these life situations over the years, you know, and that's why I say sometimes, if it weren't for people, my ministry would be great, but you could be sitting there too and say, you know, if it weren't for my father, mother, sister, brother, boss, minister, spouse, ex-spouse, if it weren't for, and you can put the fill in the blank, my life would be great. And yet, this is the stuff of life. And this is where we live. And this is where Jacob is living, and he is the pathway of redemption for all of humanity. God has talked to him. He is a man of God in his own way, but whether he's thinking a lot about that, we don't know. But we know that that happens, and I have people who have all kinds of life situations and circumstances, and some of them are pretty bad going on around me, and I know this, that if you've had your encounter with God through Jesus Christ, then you may be the pathway of redemption for somebody, your children, maybe a brother or a sister, maybe even your parents. You may be the pathway of redemption for somebody you work with, and yet you still have to live through this stuff. And I don't know if that's a hopeful message or not to you, but for some of you, I hope it is a hopeful message and that you manage to not just live horizontally, but that you look up and say, God, I don't know what you're doing here, but I'm your man or I'm your woman, and I'm going to do it as straight as I can from here on out, and that's what I'm going to do. We know that God is with Jacob. We also know that God was with Leah, do we not? Because he saw that she was hated. We'll find out that God is with Rachel, too, down the road. And he's with all those boys as well. So when it comes to your life, and you're dealing with the stuff of your life, remember, it's not just you. And that God is involved in our lives. How am I running out of time here? I'm done. So that's where we're going to leave it. That's the stuff of life. And you just go home and think about your life. If I didn't give you anything else, just think about what's going on in your life. And maybe right now. Let's pray. Lord, I ask.